12?
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Another Movie Podcast, a podcast dedicated to doing improv of landing planes safely while our eyes glow bright blue. I am Oscar, and only with me today is...
Raphael.
And Luke is on, not a vacation, but he's working. He's out of town, actually. So he will not be able to make it for this one, but I think he'll make it for the next one, right, Raph, I think?
Let's hope so.
He better. Because I get to choose the next movies.
Oh.
And I'm doing those.
Well, he likes to avoid my movies.
Yeah, that's right. This is your week. This is you picked the three films we're reviewing today. One is Sully, the true life tale of the Miracle on the Hudson and the plot in the center of that. Another movie called Don't Think Twice, which is a film about a comedy improv group in New York. And we'll end our show with a in-depth review of Midnight Special, the sci-fi suspense film about a boy with strange powers. That film came out earlier in the year, I think in March.
Sounds right.
Not 100%. And it's available to rent or buy on streaming stuff. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. And always check out our website, guys, at otherpodcast.com for future updates on when the next show is going to be, when they come out, and anything with detailed show notes and our archives. Everything you need about this show is there. And also, we have our donation is set up there through DonorBox. And I'm just mentioning this now because we are an independent podcasting group, of course. And it may seem like we're a brand new show, but we've actually been doing this for like 3 years. And so we're throwing that in there as a way to, you know, help your local podcasters, you know, if stay alive and whatnot, that all costs go to buy movie tickets, buying better equipment, just, you know, having better time to do all this stuff correctly and improve the show for the future. And for anyone that donates any amount this month, the month of September, gets a bonus episode of the movie Don't Breathe, which will, I think, Raph, you and I will be reviewing.
That is for sure.
And possibly a guest host.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that.
Right? A guest host.
Also, yeah. And I understand that we have been doing this for 3 years now, but don't worry. I will act like it's my first time.
Yeah, we're all, I mean, yeah, I feel like a virgin, totally. Completely. Oh, it still hurts a little bit still, you know, a little bit.
Sure.
So I understand. After the first year, it won't start hurting. It'll start hurting a little bit more. So yeah, Don't Breathe will be the bonus episode. It will change every month. So hopefully the next show will announce what that will be. Maybe I'll decide on this show what it'll be. But anyway, check us out for that. Now let's get into what we've been watching before we get into our main reviews. Raph, I know you don't have much or you don't remember of what you've seen this month.
Movie-wise, I can't remember if I've seen anything, which means not a good impact. I've been watching the crap out of TV. Old shows, unfortunately, like The Office.
I've been watching
that.
Fringe.
Oh.
Yeah.
I couldn't get into that. And and I started watching also Narcos.
That's right. Yeah. That's a big one. I have to start watching. I got to see it. Anyway, but I have two films here for you guys today. And one is a new film. Just came out, I think, last week. It's called Blair Witch. Yep.
Oh, how was that
sequel?
Remake?
It's a...
Reboot?
It's a reboot sequel for sure. It's one of those strange ones. It's like Ghostbusters. It's like two movies that are strange that way. They're like reboot sequels.
Okay.
They fall into the same vein. And I was going to say my quick thoughts on Blair Witch is that... and you've seen the original, right?
Unfortunately.
You don't like it?
I did not like it.
Did you never like it or did you...
No, I just never liked it.
Did you understand the hype? Were you there for the hype?
I was there for the hype. I did not understand the hype for it. I had... no likes for this movie whatsoever, just because I could not stand the shaky cam. I could not stand...
Okay, it's funny, because that movie is the big movie that introduced
sure,
it to...
Sure, and I couldn't understand the reason people liked the bad plot, so...
Right. Well, I disagree. I wouldn't call it that harsh. I would just say real quick, I did like
you know what?
The original.
I unfortunately saw it, like, it was hyped up to me. So that was the whole thing.
I mean, it was hyped up for me too, but I think I was just, maybe the age difference mattered then. You were younger, you were, like, in grade school.
Yeah, no, I was in high school.
1999? Right? I was in high school. You were not in high school.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
I was in grade school.
Yeah, same year that The Matrix came out. I remember that. Anyway, the Blair Witch Project, I think what makes it great is it's a lot of its promotion, the marketing that went into it. People legit on the street believed it was real.
I heard that.
Like, that's how crazy that movie was. And when you watch the movie, even today, I saw it. I didn't see it recently, but I saw it a few years later. By now, like 5 years ago. And I remember thinking that this movie is probably the most original and most true to its form of found footage. It's the most convincing I've ever seen in found footage.
Okay.
Give or take. You know, I mean, there might be some other ones that are really good up there too, but I can understand why Blair Witch is good. The craft of it looking like it's completely, like, craftless is really good. There's nothing smooth about it. It's like, purposely good. Yeah, and how bad it looks, you know?
Right.
Like, it works that way. But anyway, this new one tries to do very similar things. You know about the marketing for this movie? The new one?
The Blair Witching? I don't know.
It was originally titled The Woods, and only at Comic-Con this year was it released to the public that were there, the 200 people or so that were there at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
They were the first ones to know that it was actually a Blair Witch sequel, and they didn't know about it until they went in to see it.
Nice.
That was like one of those reveal things. That was cool. Unfortunately, that is the coolest thing about this movie. The rest of it is pretty bad. The actual movie itself is not very good. It's a found footage also. And it is smoother, for sure. They have, like, they have a drone in it, too. And they have, like, these weird camera pieces, like Bluetooth devices, but they have an HD camera that shoots better than any camera I have. I don't know how it does that. And it's a constant stream of people making decisions that never make sense and saying things that no one will ever really say. And unfortunately, even though the last 30 minutes, some of it's really good with the terror, it doesn't justify the movie, unfortunately. It's short, though. Thank God. It's a short movie. But seeing that movie did not really inspire anything. Anything like the original or anything really horrifying, either. It had a lot of jump scares that were pointless, too. Even at one point, a character says, like, can you stop doing that? Which is a little funny, I guess, but the movie's not a comedy. So,
right.
Yeah, the movie was a failure, so don't watch it. Especially if you didn't even like the first one. Don't even watch this
one. I told you I didn't want to watch this movie.
I was interested because I like the Adam Wingard guy, the guy who directed it. He's done some really bizarre horror movies that are, for me, 50-50. So this is one of his bad ones for me. But I really like The Guest. Have you seen that movie, The Guest?
No.
You should watch it. It's good. Anyway, so that's Blair Witch real quick on that one. And the other movie I've seen, it's much better, but way different. It's called The Fitz. Have you seen it or heard of it?
No.
You're like, well. Technically came out last year. It's an independent film, but it kind of released this year. It's on VOD, ready for rental and all that. I'll read the description. While training at the gym, 11-year-old tomboy Tony becomes entranced with a dance troupe. As she struggles to fit in, she finds herself caught in a danger, cut up in danger as the group begins to suffer from fainting spells and other violent fits. It's a strange movie. The sound,
I don't know.
Sound design of this movie is plays like a medieval horror movie. It's so strange.
It's a weird
but it works so well. The movie barely has any dialogue in it, but it's all a physical performance. It's all about what you're watching, the way you're watching. It's all through a perspective of this character, Tony. 11-year-old girl is so good, this actress. I hope she has a career in the future. And everything is through her perspective so rigorously that you can't help but admire the craft and the filmmaking because, like, what you see is what she sees. What she's focusing on is what you're focusing on. And it's so, like, regimented to it that when there's a conversation that maybe as an audience member you want to overhear,
yeah,
she doesn't give a fuck, so you won't hear it. Things like that.
Okay.
Even though they're right in front of her, she's focusing on something else. The film forces you to do that too. And it really gets you into her headspace. And the movie overall is ultimately, I think, and it could be about a lot of things, but it seems like to me a giant theme or analogy of growing up. You know, maybe puberty or something like that. And the way that these girls, like, every day go through these fits, right? Go through these things where they have seizure-like things and they fall on the floor and everyone else around them don't know what to do and seemingly don't care. And at one point it becomes so common occurrence that, like, it's like, who's going to be next? And she's worried about her being next. Mm-hmm. And it's really about worrying about growing up a bit.
Gotcha.
It's really cool. It's a strange movie. I really recommend it.
Is it through her point of view the whole time, or is it?
Yeah, I mean,
like, do we see her, or is it like?
What do you mean? Oh, I see. It's not POV. Sorry, and the movie's not POV itself. Sorry, we see her on the screen all the
time.
Sure. Yeah. I just meant the camera works to her senses only.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Okay. I should have been more specific. But that's The Fitz. I don't want to ruin too much because it's kind of a discovery movie for me. I didn't know anything about it. And I already kind of said too much, but in the first 20 minutes, a lot of that happens already. And I recommend it. It's very physical performance because she's training in the beginning to be a boxer with her brother. and she does all the Rocky-like training of going up the stairs and all that stuff. And then she's slowly turning that into this dance thing that she's becoming into, and she mixes both in there. And the way she's going about it, it's all physical, like I said. It's really, really good.
Well,
and it earns her smiles, man. Anyway, so that's The Fitz, available to rent anywhere you want. Anyway, that's it for what we've been watching, or what I've been watching. Let's get into our first review today with Sully.
The best chance those passengers had was on that river. And I'd bet my life on it. In fact, I did. And I would do it again.
Aviation engineers are theorizing you had enough energy to make it back to a runway.
Well, engineers are not pilots. They're wrong. No, they weren't there.
You stated that it was a dual engine failure due to multiple bird strikes.
That would be unprecedented.
Well, everything is unprecedented until it happens for the first time.
The story of Chelsea Sullenberger, who became a hero after gliding his plane along the water in the Hudson River, saving all of the airplane flight's 155 crew and passenger. The movie, Sully, starring our beloved Tom Hanks.
America's heart. Yeah, kid. He's our child. He's our father. He's everything.
He's everything. Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, co-starring Aaron Eckhart, Laura Linney, Valerie Mahaffey. Is that her name? Yeah, that's how you
Mahaffey.
Say it. Mahaffey.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of Michael Malley in here.
Yeah, I know him, Michael Malley, for sure. Anna Gunn from
Breaking Bad. I was about to say Anna Gunn here for sure.
For like two scenes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You know. People. Those are the big people that I guess most people would know.
Yeah, I would say so.
This is a biopic about...
Oh, no, Mike Rappaport. He plays the bartender in that one scene.
Yeah.
He's so wacky.
Yeah. This is a biopic or biopic.
A true story, maybe,
yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah,
also, it's one of those like live event, two event.
Right, yeah.
It was like a history thing.
I think that's a theme this year, right?
It feels like a theme.
Well,
but
you know, we have two big themes that happen in the year. They always like two or three movies.
What's the other
there's
one?
There's like three movies. I don't know what the other one is yet.
Somewhere. Okay.
And I think it might be animated movies, like new animated movies.
Could be Snowden.
Well, Snowden similar. For this one is the other one, right?
Snowden feels more biopic
sure.
than this
there's,
one is.
But there's another movie also. There's always like two, three movies.
Yeah, maybe.
That kind of like are the same. It's like the...
Hollywood's so predictable. Really,
right. It's like the
saying.
Deep Impact and Armageddon thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Also, I've been calling this movie White Flight, which is funny because it's funny. You meet some people and they instantly know what flight is, the movie that stars Denzel Washington, directed by Robert Zemeckis. And other people don't even remember it or have never seen it, even though it was a big movie.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned Robert Zemeckis and Denzel Washington.
I know, too.
So white people know... Because of Zemeckis, and all the black people know because of Denzel Washington.
Yeah, well, I call it The White Flag only because, you know, this movie is Tom Hanks instead of Denzel. But, like, this movie also starred with another great American known actor and also another great American known director.
Right, I didn't even mention Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you were saying.
As I was saying. So this movie is, I guess, Clint Eastwood's second movie after he decided to stop acting, third movie.
No, he goes in and out.
Well, no, he said like he's not acting in his own movies anymore.
Oh, anymore? Did he say that?
I think that's what he said.
Okay. Yeah, I know that.
So, that being said, at least two in a row.
Well, he's 86, I think.
Yeah. And his mom is like 99.
His mom's still alive.
Or like 100 something.
What the fuck is that? Yeah.
Good for him. Good for
jeans.
Great jeans. They're Levi's, guys. Anyways, So, overall, I think this movie for me... I think it came out at a great time in September honoring 9/11.
Right, yeah. You mentioned that. I totally missed that point. That really clearly.
I think
clearly
it came out the week right before 9/11.
Yeah.
Or the week after. Yeah. One of the two.
And it's funny. This is the first, by the way, side note, this is the first 9/11 year that no one mentioned 9/11 to me. Or I ever heard it.
Really? And it was like a big anniversary.
Like it, but it didn't feel. No one mentioned it. I didn't even think about it until like days after.
Well, the reason it was
which is a good
it was pretty
thing,
big because it landed on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And Football Sunday literally started that football season started on that, on 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
They had it on every broadcast, President Obama and ex-President
this year.
Bush. Yeah, this year. They had a big announcement like talking about 9/11. Well, I saw it because I watched football.
Yeah.
I saw it for every game. And I see a lot of games.
Yeah.
That being said, yeah, so I think it came out at a great time honoring New York in general and everything with having to do with the two towers. But yeah, so perfect timing. And I think it did, I think it caught the essence of what how we respond, how we've responded to stuff, and how we can be, right? Especially in New York. I think I caught that perfectly towards the end, and it's a middle towards the end when they show the whole movie. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, you're talking about the way that, you know...
how all the responders...
The hope of it all?
Yeah, like I guess. It's more like how the boat sees the happening, and he immediately goes to respond, and you see everybody responds. Like,
you do see that, yeah. It's captured really well.
Right, and that's, I think the movie does such a great job of capturing that. Mm. Seeing New York work together right away. Like, and that's something that, you know, it brings up same thing for 9/11. And I thought it just captured... I mean, I thought it was just, like, note for note. It did really well.
Yeah, what do you think this movie is mainly about? It has a lot of things going on, I think, but...
That's a good question, actually.
Because, like, I think that Clint Eastwood himself, we see it in Unforgiven. We see it... Maybe not Unforgiven so much, but I think it's in there, especially American Sniper. Those are the two I can remember. There's tons of other movies. He's done, like, 40-plus movies
now. Sure.
But... He focuses on, obviously, male leads. He focuses on American male leads.
Yeah.
And he likes to definitely direct movies about what it means to be an American hero. Even if that's not hero, let's just say American male, man.
Sure.
But if not that, he tries for hero. American Sniper is all about that, too, and that's the last movie. So... yeah, I think that this movie is definitely about that, I think, because that's Clint Eastwood's oeuvre. And,
I get where you're going with it, the American hero. I think he does a little bit of both, though, so it's definitely...
Definitely, yeah. He does a New York thing, too.
Right, no. I meant, like, he wants to portray how an American, how people see Americans, I think, and how we can be, right? But, and it falls in line with it being an American hero. Some of the times, and not most of the times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at Sully. He doesn't consider himself a hero at all. The whole movie, right?
Right, he's even questioning...
He even questions himself
the whole time,
time, right?
A little too much, I think, for me. I think we got it after the fifth time.
At some points, yes, you're right. But at the same time, like, this is a guy who, like, just... He did everything right his whole life, right? Or what he thought was right in himself. And then he comes up to... choose this thing, and it obviously was the right thing to do.
Right.
I think that's a big trait in most of his movies, I would say. It's always obviously an American hero or American man choosing to do what they end up believing is right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's Unforgiven right there.
Yeah, totally.
So, and that's going back how many years? I mean, Morgan Freeman looked young. So,
yeah, he did.
But he still talked very old.
Well, that's how he was born.
Exactly. That's true.
Poor guy.
You think so? I think he did the announcements at his school back in the day.
He would ask for his mom to watch cartoons in such a convincing way. It was like, I can't even fucking copy. Mother, Pink Panther's on.
Right.
I don't know. Whatever. I see what you mean. I do think that it's a little two-dimensional. Like, there is no... every perspective is very... Like, if you're going with that... the whole Americans and how we see it. It's Americans seeing Americans.
Sure.
It's all, like, very, very strange. I like a lot of this movie. I don't love everything about it. And even the most thing that I love about it doesn't make me love the movie. I really do like this movie, though. I came out liking it, especially when I expected nothing, because I kind of fell away from Clint Eastwood movies.
Yeah.
He's done, like, 5 bad ones in a row, except for this one, obviously. And I think Tom Hanks... manages to capture a lot of the does a lot of the heavy lifting.
Oh, for
that,
sure.
I mean, just like that guy cannot lose. I'm not saying every movie of his is great.
No, it's not.
But he's never the worst thing in any movie. If anything, he's almost always the best thing in every movie. And Tom Hanks manages to, like, find that, like, polarity or that fight, that struggle about, like, can he be considered a hero? Can he the way he, like, has to dismiss, and he's just so. He's so, like, almost, like, Midwestern nice about everything. Like, he, like, that drink at that bar, he didn't have to pay for that, but he overpaid it. And he didn't have to think of himself this way. He doesn't want to talk to the bride. He doesn't even notice them unless he has to pass through them. Like, none of it's really affecting him in a narcissistic way.
Sure.
You know, and I find that really cool in the way he, you know, constantly struggles around, like, did he do the right thing or not?
Yeah.
I mean, he did. He was for sure about it, but, like, I don't know. Like, That's kind of hard to talk about this movie, I guess. But anyway, I like that struggle.
So I'll go with the, and I like the movie overall too. I can't say I love it. I'd have to rewatch it to tell you if I love it. But I do really like it.
Yeah.
So that's for sure. And I would definitely recommend this movie to somebody. Although most people probably already know if they're going to go watch this movie, I think.
I mean, people that I talked to about this movie, they were like on the verge of tears all the time, and they were really emotional.
I wasn't like that. But
I wasn't emotional at all.
No.
I liked it, but
yeah,
it wasn't like.
What did you think of how the movie was delivered to you? So it was given to you in different points of views. You saw.
We
basically see the accident. Or
I mean, we see the accident like five times.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you.
Technically, two times. Two real times. And I liked, actually, this is one of the few times where the Hollywood glossy finish of Hollywood movies actually benefited, because it looked really realistic and really well done, and the palette was so normal, like I said, very glossy HD, but like the way the plane lands and the way everything is set, it looks very commonplace, but that's not supposed to look. It looks like, I mean, whatever Hollywood's rendition of life looks like. You've seen a ton of those movies. It kind of, your mind's eye convinces that that's reality. So, like, it all looks perfectly exactly how it should be. There was not one time I didn't believe that wasn't that I thought that was plane was fake or anything.
Yeah.
That was a real, that was a real plane, even though they didn't land shit in there. Whole portrayal was really good. And, I even liked, I was like, I wonder, where's Aaron Eckhart? He was like in 50 movies a year, like 10 years ago. Now he's like, I haven't seen him in forever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was really good. I liked him as a co-pilot. I liked the how he tries to give him a lot of credit as well.
Well, this was his first time flying with him, too. That was funny.
Was that the first time?
Yeah, first time they were flying together. What I liked, actually, and I was kind of worried. It was going to do the whole flight movie thing, which is just show it once and it's it.
See, I was going to ask you that. I was going to
I was like, okay, they're going to do one of two things. We're going to see it in the beginning. Or we're going to see this at the very end, right? And we're just going to talk about it, right?
No, we get it in the middle.
And we get it the whole thing, the whole movie, right? And I thought that was cool, because that is literally the only action-y thing part. And I don't want action and everything, but that is the big, you know, gets the feels and everything, gets you worked up.
Right,
about whatever the thing. So I think they did a good job, and especially like hearing the recording one, I thought that was a really cool time too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was awesome how he kind of brings up, although I do feel like the dialogue is really, and I'm pretty sure some of it was taken from the transcripts from the actual court.
Apparently it was, and this is strange, and I wonder what you think about this too. They copied the whole black box recorder. Mm-hmm. They copied it, and then they had Tom Hanks and Aaron Eckhart do it.
Word for word?
Yeah, word for word.
Good.
The only weird thing is that they could have put the real thing in there. And, like, they could have, there's so many ways they could have spun this, because nowadays it seems like we want to hire real newscasters to tell fake news in a movie.
Sure.
In this particular case, since it was so well documented and it came out, this happened, what, 2011 or 9 or something? I don't remember.
2009, I think.
2009, maybe. But either way, there are plenty of news reports, plenty of dossiers and in-depth interviews and all this stuff. They could have showed the real Sully on the TV screens when Tom Hanks was at a bar or walking around the hotel. You know, they could have done a lot of that. They could have done a lot of easy work to include and make this quote-unquote more realistic, because I know they don't look the same, but they have the same general build. And the mannerisms, from my understanding about Tom Hanks and Sully, he gets it right.
Yeah.
So, like, they could have done all that. And what do you think that they did? And they went out of their way to
I just think it takes you out of it. Going like this makes you feel like this is where we're reimagining it, or we're redoing it. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it as to the best Hollywood standard. I don't know if I would like it better if it was the other way. I don't mind it in some
things. No, just an interesting question, because I think that's like our thing nowadays, that we do that a lot.
It is our thing. I actually like the whole, I think Clint Eastwood did the whole Hollywood thing where he's like, nope, everybody gets replaced. Or the old school Hollywood thing, right?
Yeah.
So I like it. I prefer it that way.
No,
yeah,
I liked it.
It worked great for me.
I'm curious how it would look otherwise.
I do appreciate the thing at the very end, though. They do show the actual Sullenberger.
Did you stay a little bit after the credits?
I guess I didn't in time.
You stay after the credits. They go. They show him, and he talks to the crew and all.
I wanted to beat the old people out of the theater.
Well, that's all. I got trapped, so I couldn't leave.
And that's what I'm saying. I left. That's why I left.
So they have the whole crew, and he talks to the crew on the flight and the, and the people, and he's like commemorating, like, you know, this happened, this and that, like, thank you for everything.
I think another thing that it captures is that it captures how much of a miracle the action was. I mean, this is a once in a lifetime thing. This will probably never happen again. The chances that it happened once at all is amazing. It's almost like that. What is that law that, you know, that scientific law that anything that can happen will happen? This is one of those things, but it will just happen once. Like, like the fact that
the fact that he landed it
on the water, and no one died.
Right. I mean, I think one of my favorite scenes is, or one of the funniest moments in the movie, is when they're talking to the air traffic pilot or the air traffic control guy.
Oh, I love that
guy.
And
he comes back in, and he's like, what are you doing here? Like, oh, dude, didn't you hear? Like, I lost a plane. And he's like, no.
Yeah, because he knows.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, no, the guy landed it. He's like, what the fuck? He's like, they got to put a TV in here.
Yeah, that poor guy was suffering.
Yeah, he was suffering.
I felt a lot for that guy, and he was just like a regular, he was in two scenes.
Right.
Or three, maybe.
Yeah.
And yeah, I felt sorry for him, because he was trying his hardest to get him to land at a runway.
Right.
Because he knows, like everyone knows, even though I would suspect a lot of people don't know. They think that the water's safe. No. The water coming in at that kind of speed, that heavy, it's just like concrete.
Right.
It's worse because you can't actually land anything on it.
If anyone's seen Air Force One, they show the dimensions of them landing. Remember that?
I don't remember.
They show what's it called? Well, they show the plane when it crashes, and it looks like it's hitting cement. Right?
Yeah,
only it's horrible CGI because it's back in the 90s.
I guess so, yeah.
But it was like, duh, and it breaks through, and it looks like it's hitting cement, not water.
Because that's how it feels like when you hit it. And when people fall off bridges into the waters, they die. They break out bones in their body from the impact. So water's not nice. Yeah. You have to be 5 feet up. Anything higher than that is going to hurt you.
Yeah.
So in case someone thinks that water's cool. It's an amazing thing, and I really like how it's captured it, and I do like its questions, even though it doesn't really answer them, doesn't go too in-depth about it, because the movie, I mean, blissfully, it's actually short. It might be Eastwood's shortest movie.
I wouldn't know that. But
it's like, it doesn't even crack 2 hours, I don't think.
No, 136?
Yeah.
So, 127 with credits? I don't know, I assume it's 10 minutes of credits for everything now.
Yeah, I know. It's a shortest movie, and I guess even though they don't fully explain it, I do like the how it brings up questions of what it means to be a hero, and more importantly, maybe, what it means to be a hero today, and how what people see you as is more important than what your superiors know you for. Because the whole thing with the NTSB, and they're portrayed very much villainous, which I didn't like about it. They're not portrayed villainous, but they're portrayed very venomously.
Right, they are portrayed like that, but we also get, and go figure from our hero, it's like they're just doing their job. Like, don't get mad.
I know, he's so nice. He has to say that. Like, fuck you.
That's the other thing. I don't know if I like too much about it, and that's kind of one of the faults for the movie. And like I said, I don't know if this Sullenberger guy is actually like that.
I hear he is.
And that's kudos to him, but he's like, a lot of it feels like really, it felt sort of scripted. Like, maybe he's just well taught, well spoken. That's great. But a lot of it felt like, especially when
it could be one of those true to life things that doesn't. It's true to life, but if you put it in film, it'll look fake.
Right? Maybe it's like that.
Maybe he's actually nicer, and we just won't believe it.
Right? And in the court, when he gives a thing like, you know, like, oh, like the X factor was you. He's like, no, the X factor was all of us. And he goes into this.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And it felt really over the top. And I was like, that's a little bit over the top.
Whereas I would say, like, yeah, it was me.
Right. Well,
I'm the captain.
I mean, they even asked the other guy, "What did you say?" He goes, "I wish it was in July."
Oh my God! Yes. Yeah.
Like, if you had to take anything from it, if you had to do it again, they asked him.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny. Like,
that was funny. What do you think of that weird, there's a lot of side plots also involved that never go anywhere either. Not a lot. There's like two or three, but to me, that's a lot. Especially that one where he's talking to his wife on the phone. By the way, they never meet in the movie, which is strange.
I thought they were like separated or something.
It's just stuck over there doing press and shit.
The previews make it feel like they're separated or divorced or something.
I don't remember the previews, I guess. Maybe they do. They're talking about their finances and how they may be in a rut now if he can't fly anymore and how it's a bad thing. But that never goes anywhere beyond that conversation. It's just there and... As far as I know, it was never resolved. And that's not a terrible thing. But do you think that they were trying to, like... Do you think that there's, like, a version of this movie that's, like, an actual hour longer, and they really just cut it down in the process of making it?
No, I think there's a little bit more. Maybe, like, maybe like 20 minutes more at best.
Okay, yeah, maybe not an hour, but
sure.
More.
But I think they try to connect it with the whole scene where he talks to his co-pilot. I forget his name.
Jeff Skiles. Skiles.
Skiles, okay.
Sorry, Skiles. I mean, that would be way too obvious.
Yeah. And I'm Susan Storm. Yeah. So when he's talking to...
I'm Tony Reporter Man.
Yeah. When he's talking to his co-pilot, and the co-pilot is like, Jeff's like, I looked you up, and you're some safety guy. And he's like,
yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, and you make it seem like you have this big business, but you really don't, right?
Right.
And it's the whole thing. Like, he's like, that's supposed to be his retirement plan, right?
Yeah, that side business.
Because he already invested a lot of money into it already. And that was the whole trick to it. I think they were trying to combine that, because they had the conversation around the same time.
That's true.
And it was like, oh, hey, you invested all this money, and no one's going to obviously find you a safety pilot if they find you this, you know? So, yeah, I guess that's the connection. Although you have to kind of think about it. It's not really there. You have to put the two and two together.
What did you think of the whole human factor thing?
Which, what do you mean?
How they, the NTSB did not put in the human factor of, well, like, you have to actually...
That just sounds like insurance companies. Like,
right.
Oh, that sounds perfect insurance. Like,
so oh, it's well, very believable for you.
Super believable. Just because, like, the fact, like, oh, well, you know, we ran the numbers, and that would be impossible for you to do. It's like, I've been through there with work, for example, and they're like, oh, you're supposed to be able to unload this trailer in this,
and it's
in this
time. Amount of time. And you don't account for, like, sweating or exertion?
Well,
or,
you don't, exactly. You don't account for the fact that, like, oh, I don't know, my team needs to breathe, like, stuff like that of that nature. They're like, well, you know, we tested it out. Like, no, you didn't. Like, you just ran numbers, and you said one person can move a box this fast, and you just multiplied it.
Yeah,
you
never put everything else in it. Which, I mean, it's not a faulty thing. Just don't blame me for it. That's the whole point.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the same thing here, except taking to a grander scale.
Sure.
And, you know, it's funny because there's this podcaster, very famous, called Dan Carlin. He does this history podcast stuff. And one of the things that I really love about what he mentions in his historical stuff, especially in wartime, is that the human factor is never taken into account, especially like in the World War One and Two. How like
in the books? Or
yeah, generals will have these great plans and never take into account, like, hey, these soldiers are walking for days on end. They're going to get tired. You're not accounting the extra time you'll need to get this plan to action because they have to fucking rest
right.
or they have to fucking eat. Or they're going to get like psychotically fucked up because they're in this same fight for like 2 months.
That's how the whole saying goes.
You know,
on paper, it looks great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is the same thing. Now that compared to that, this is a minor scale. But I did like that, and I like how it's. I'm trying to think of a movie or something popular like this movie is that explores that, or has ever you mentioned it, and I can't think of one. And I'm glad that this movie did.
Yeah, I'm actually glad how he brings it up too, because I was watching with our
at 35 seconds for human.
Well, I love how it's just like, oh well, we crunched the numbers, typical insurance, right?
Right.
And we're gonna give you 35 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think. If you add up all the real time with them waiting for communication to see where to go, because they never account for that either. They just go like, oh, well, we know where to go. We have to turn left right away and do all these things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it felt really simulated, especially when you watch it the first time. You're like, yeah, that just looks bad. Like, it looks like everything was, dude, there's nobody, everybody knows what to do. We've been in this situation before. We're good to go.
Yeah, we know instantly what's going on.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So overall, we liked the movie.
Yeah, I liked it.
You watch it again?
I would.
This is a surprisingly blockbuster, big movie that isn't action, that isn't bloody, that isn't sexual.
Cool figure, right?
That I enjoy. That I don't mind being a hit.
Yeah. I was really worried because actually I didn't know that all the survivors, everybody made it.
Yeah.
I was really worried that one of the idiots just who swam away was just like,
oh my god, and then he came back.
Come on, guys, like how?
And he's freaking out.
Yeah, I could totally make that. And he's like, no, I can't. I gotta go back.
Oh, also one of my favorite scenes. I know we haven't really mentioned that stuff, but one of my favorite scenes is when he calls his wife when they landed. And he's like, you're going to hear some stuff.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. She's like, what? Don't worry about it.
I'm fine.
And then she turned on the television.
Yeah.
I like that scene a lot. Basically, any scene where he's like by himself almost, like dealing with something. But yeah, I like this stuff when he's interacting with his co-pilot and other people. But his alone stuff, Tom Hanks being like alone, acting with himself really, or to his wife on the phone, or in a hotel room just thinking, probably the best stuff, I think.
Yeah.
So that's Sully. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will review a very different kind of movie, I would argue, called Don't Think Twice. So stay with us.
The theater's closing. We've got to be out of there in 4 weeks. They're selling. Another Trump building, I think.
New York City is over.
New York City, you're fired.
Breath for America, you're fired.
All of America, you're fired.
What the hell was that?
That was Trump.
JFK.
Your impersonation is so bad, you're fired.
When a member of a popular New York City improv troupe gets a huge break, the rest of the group start to realize that not everyone is going to make it after all.
True.
Yep. Don't Think Twice, the comedy drama movie, directed by Mark Birbiglia, starring Mike Birbiglia, Keegan-Michael Key, Jillian Jacobs, Chris Gethard, Kate Micucci, I can't say her name.
Micucci.
There you go. Tammy Sagar. And that's pretty much the big ones. So we'll leave it at that. Obviously, there's some guest stars and stuff. So Don't Think Twice. This is the movie that came out. I thought it came out earlier in the year, but I was wrong. We just caught it in theaters before it left, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's unfortunately is that if you miss this movie, you're going to have to, either skip this review or, just catch this review after you see it when it comes out on VOD eventually.
Yeah, hopefully it comes out pretty soon on VOD.
It was only out on major cities as far as I know.
Yeah, I know it came out in Chicago for sure, New York and L.A. I don't know about anybody. I don't know anywhere else.
Maybe
but,
Austin.
It did a splash here at, the indie cinemas, for example.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Like Century Cinema.
Yeah, I mean, Music Box had it for, I think a whole week straight.
Yeah,
it was out on and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, which I think they expected a little bit bigger. I don't know how it did overall because of Keegan-Michael Key.
And Julian Jacobs. I mean, Community is still a famous
that is true.
Property.
That is true. I guess, but more recent is...
Yeah, definitely more recent, yeah.
Sure. That being said, what did you... we'll go with you because there's nobody else to throw this at. What did you think of the movie?
I overall enjoyed it, and I realized that it's definitely much more of a... And it blends in almost equal drama to comedy. And it definitely doesn't most dramedies or most romantic comedies or most anything with comedy attached to it tend to lean more on the comedy because that's how you get more butts in the seats, as you get more laughter, as you get more good reception, audience likes you more. This movie is almost like it's compared to those movies. It's a horror movie in the fact that it blends in it's equal parts both, and I would even say that maybe the drama hits harder than the comedy. The light moments of comedy, which is a good thing. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. It's a refreshing thing, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I overall enjoyed the film more than I thought it would be. Or I should say, I overall enjoyed the movie in a different way than I expected. Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I get where you're going with it, and I think what the drama does in the movie, it makes you forget that there's these great comedic moments. Because that's how I felt, that it's just like, oh, these are really serious moments.
Right.
And then you forgot that, we were just laughing, 10 seconds ago.
Right, yeah.
And now it's just like, wow, I feel awkward being in this theater now. A little bit of that.
A lot of that.
Yeah, that's for sure, actually. That is quite refreshing. And I will agree with you. I liked the movie a lot, actually. And what I do agree with you, though, it is refreshing, actually, to watch something that I did not expect to where it goes. I guess, you always have an expectation of what the movie's going to be, especially if you even knew a little bit about it. So, and that's just human nature. But I liked where it went overall. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, what did you think of the comedy style itself? Because it's playing on improv. And it's funny because Mike Birbiglia, and I don't know about Key or Keenan Mike, whatever his name is.
Keegan-Michael Key?
Yeah, sorry. I don't know Key and Peele, by the way.
Neither do I, but I know of them.
Gillian Jacobs, and I know Chris Gethard was. Anyway, a lot of these are stand-ups, a lot of them are skit people. Most of them are just actors, though, especially Gillian Jacobs, who is probably the star. I know there's no star. This is truly an ensemble, but Gillian Jacobs is the one that I think outperforms everyone else.
Yes.
Almost by a mile. She is that much. She is really good in this movie, and she is the heart of the movie. She is the heart of the group itself too, in more ways than one. And she is.
Well, I do think we follow her a lot more.
It feels that way because everyone does get a lot of screen time. I mean, you're right. Kate. Fucking Christ. Anyway, I keep thinking of that show that she's in. With that other girl, the singing.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the
Garfunkel
name.
And Oates.
Garfunkel and Oates. There, yeah. There you go.
I don't know why I keep confusing her as Garfunkel. Anyway, and it's. What did you think of the comedy? Because those moments when they're on stage doing improv, those are scripted scenes, so they're not really improv. Do you think they pulled it off?
I mean, I think it falls apart. The improv-ness of it, right? When in some parts, like especially when Keegan Michael Key's character kind of comes in and just like, hey,
oh, this is Obama.
This is Obama impersonation.
Oh, Jesus
for sure.
Christ. That was not funny. That was like awkward as shit. That what are you doing, dude?
Right, exactly.
After the guy just told you.
Yeah. So there's little things of that nature. But overall, actually, I felt it was fine. I think more in the beginning, I felt it was fine. Some parts in the middle, towards the end, I did feel like they were
more scripted.
It felt a little bit more scripted, but it also felt like, I don't know if it felt more scripted because I'm already used to seeing their comedy and like how they work together, right? Mm-hmm. Where their minds go. It's like once you know like the magic behind it, right? Like you kind of like you know how to break the illusion, sort of.
Maybe. I feel like I had the opposite reaction. I think it felt all scripted all the time, but it wasn't a bad deal because I think I got used to it, like, overall once the scenes kept, and they're never long scenes either. Like if they're not gonna have an important moment in it, like when Weekend Live recruiters or scouts are on the scene, like, yeah, they'll focus a bit more on that show because it's important to the plot and it's gonna progress, you know, Key's character, what's his name, Jack, into that whole thing about, you know, him and stardom. Like, if it was, you know, obviously those are important scenes, they'll have a little bit of the improv and then add the script elements and the plot elements into it. But like all the other stuff when they're showing the group being a group on stage, it's really short, no more than a minute long each time. And they never finish a skit.
Right.
They always start it and they never finish it. Which is a good thing because, like I said, it felt very scripted, but it was never very long. And I got used to it by the end and it wasn't a bad deal. And it was still funny. Even the stuff that Like, I don't remember, like, what was that whole thing about? They do that whole thing about the death of Jack as a character.
Yeah.
And they're like, but the body's not there anymore. What happened? And they're at the fake funeral.
Yeah.
And that was really funny. It was scripted, but it was really funny, regardless of how it felt.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I liked it. And I think there is some strange chemistry between these people because they're all very different people.
Yeah.
They're all after the same thing. Well, not really, but they all essentially are after the same thing, which is stardom.
Yeah, and it also kind of felt
a career,
a little tropey-ish, where it's like you have to have one of everything.
You mean between them all?
Yeah,
like you have to have like a neurotic one,
right?
It
was like the neurotic kind of person, the what's it called, the super shy one, the super enthusiastic one, the guy who's been in the business for forever, the old time.
Who teaches.
Like, yeah, it's just it felt a little bit like that, but at the same time, not really. It just feels because I guess I've heard so many stories from comedians.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe that's the reason it felt like that.
What do you think of the fact that even though these people are, some of them are best friends. Two of them are dating actually. They live together for the most part. Some of them are together. They're together all the time. Is my point. Is that they're almost like they're coworkers, but also really good friends. And what do you think of the fact that even though they are really close, but they always look out for each other, for themselves only, not for each other, for themselves? What do you think about that? Because the movie kind of explores that without saying it, especially in Mike Birbiglia's character, where he's clearly looking after himself, and Key's also like clearly looking after himself first. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm saying that the movie is very biting and it's commentary about that. It really puts it forward and makes it awkward a lot of times.
Yeah, it does. Especially with Jack's character,
yeah,
makes it really freaking awkward.
Like the skit he stole from the improv day, or whatever. Not stole, whatever it is. I don't know.
Right. I mean, how do you steal something that you're part of, also that you did as well?
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I get it. I mean, do you, what do you, what's the moral of, where do you, where's the line, right, for that? Do you ask for permission for that?
Right, yeah. Can you look past it? Is it just a question of moving on, like high school? Like, I'm not saying just because these people are too old for it. They don't seem too old. I've definitely seen older improv people. Maybe they hate their lives. I have no idea. I don't know how they feel like these people are not. But at the same time, is that I've seen spectrums of them being, of this kind of people being older and younger. So I don't think it's a question of that, but it's a question of, like, it's, I guess it's time. It's just time to separate. It's time to move, not even forward, just move on. You know, I'm not saying forward to a grand or, you know, something hopeful and Hollywood-y, just something different. Like, Mike Birbiglia has a thing with his girlfriend.
Sure. But they're still best friends. You know, that's the difference. Like, I think what the movie does well, and I guess that's what it weren't that well, but I guess what the movie tries to do, and this is what I took from it, with the best friend aspect, which was what you're asking, is that they had to move on professionally away from each other. Right? Because, hey, listen, it worked great, but obviously it was never going to last forever.
Right.
Right. But they can still hang out. It's like, it's like we all went to high school, all my best friends, right?
Well, some of them stay still to make that other group, right?
Sure. Right. Yeah, but I'm saying all my, I went to high school with a lot of my friends, a lot of my close friends, right? But hey, we all didn't have to go to work at the same place afterwards, right?
Right. Yeah.
And stuff like that. But we're all still really good friends. You know, we're all still best friends. We all still hang out with each other. You know, we all look out for each other, but we also look out for ourselves. You know, like, because we have to. Like, I mean, it makes sense. There is a point in time where we do have to grow up, and we're willing to do what we can for our friends, but, like, you can't expect us to bend, you know, everything for you either. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, even Jack's character, like, he tries so hard. Like, and even gets, like, told, like, 7,000 times from everybody at work.
Oh, yeah, God. Yeah,
like,
don't.
Dude, stop doing it. Like,
yeah, stop bringing your friend shit into Not That Funny and just worry about yourself. Worry about surviving first season.
Yeah.
And they say all this shit on him. And it's another world of the same genre of comedy, right?
For sure. Unfortunately, not everyone is going to be cut out for everything, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that was Mike Birbiglia's character's little arc about him just not having it.
Yeah.
And he was clearly the older one. He's a teacher, right? He teaches improv, too, on his spare time.
Right, he taught Jack.
Jack, that you taught the guy that's in Weekend Live, which is a Saturday Night Live ripoff, obviously. And it's very accurate, actually. Even their fake intro was so
super accurate.
Even though I haven't seen Saturday Night Live in forever.
Even their, like,
style.
Smiles and everything.
Oh, Jesus, it was so bad. And that bike. Why does he have a bike? But, yeah. Like, why is
it was really good. It was really, like, spot on.
It was spot on. It was very good there. I
think my favorite scenes, but it's the saddest scenes, were watching them watch Weekend Live.
Oh, my God.
It was just so bad.
It was self-torture.
Because
they want to be there, but they're making fun of it because they're not there yet.
Right.
And then one of their members gets in, and it just makes that much more complicated.
Right.
On top of it being awkward and pathetic.
It was just funny because I mean, especially when Mike Birbiglia's character, I think it's Mike, right? He brings
Miles.
He brings his girlfriend, or trying to be girlfriend.
Oh, God.
And like, she's like trying to laugh, but like everyone is like dead silent or dead, like no laughing faces.
I know, and she's like clearly the only adult there.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
It's just so weird.
I mean,
I know everybody
lived together except for the one who lived with her parents.
Yeah.
Right, because she was rich.
Yeah, she was rich and had a psychologist. Everyone made fun of her.
Right.
Psychiatrist or psychologist? I don't know the difference.
No, psychiatrist, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was funny. One thing I really want to talk about, definitely don't want to do this review without talking about Gillian Jacobs. I always forget how to pronounce her name. I mentioned already that she's like the best performance. She is definitely the heart of the movie. All that's true. But what do you think of the fact that she is the only one that actually, like, wants to do improv and improv only, like, find solace? It's like the equivalent of finding solace as being a fry cook and never moving up from that.
Right. That's
what they're calling it almost in this movie. Without saying it, that's what they call it. And everyone wants to move forward. This is a stepping stone to something else. For her, this is the end.
Yeah.
This is what she wants to do.
Right. I mean, I actually found her character to be probably the boldest one out of all of them for that reason.
Oh, and that solo performance, Jesus, that scene was amazing.
Oh my God,
that scene was so
all
good.
She needed to do was put on the fucking
what's that famous clown, the depressing clown or whatever?
The what clown?
The Italian depressing clown.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, okay.
All she needed to do is dress like him, and it would have been like a perfect performance for a solo performance.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she tried. She really did.
And she actually got some good laughs out of me.
Yeah, she got some laughs out of me too. But yeah. I was just like, ooh, rough crowd.
Rough. That was rough. Not rough crowd, rough her, man. No one came. Yeah. And then until her ex-boyfriend comes in, and then they do that wonderful breakup on scene.
Yeah.
On set. That was really good.
Yeah.
That was a good scene. That was a really great scene. Definitely a standout. I really like that stuff. And I agree. It's definitely, it's funny how the most unrealistic of the arcs is the one that I found most enjoyable to watch and most inspiring was hers. Because, yeah, I mean, the chances of finding someone that only wants to do that and is happy in that state of situation,
yeah,
living how they live and being a waitress as well as doing improv just to make ends meet, and how old she is. That is more of a fantasy, finding that kind of person,
right,
than it is finding every other character in this movie.
Right, exactly.
Because they all want to move on.
Right. But she's, you know, and it's cool that she found something and then she's willing to, I think she manned up a lot, or not manned up, but like she just
womaned up,
yeah, sure. She just like stepped up to everybody and saying like I'm fine with everything. Like, you guys,
that's why she's the leader also.
Right. You guys are the ones who want to do everything else, but nobody decides to do anything about it. Mm. Like,
or stuck in their own neuroses or life.
Right. Well, I mean, cycles or like whatever. Everybody had their thing where nobody,
some don't want to admit that they're bad.
Right.
Some don't want to work more harder on it because they don't understand. Some are too shy, like that girl with a note. Well, that was a great
drawing. She did a comics.
Yeah, I actually like some of her ideas. Yeah, and there's such a like, and also, and I know Kikuchi. Fuck, I keep fucking up her name. Mikuchi. I've known that. I've seen her stuff. I've seen Birbiglia stuff before. Not seen Kiel's, but I've seen Jacob's work before. So I've seen like half the cast.
I love her
work before, and they all relate to, like, it makes sense to their characters too.
I love the dating game with Abraham Lincoln. That was so cool.
That was perfect.
That was such a cool thing.
That was funny. And like, no, I want to see that though. Anything else in this movie?
I'm trying to think. I mean,
does it make you feel like, does it make you think about like one of your friends moving up to an astronomically celebrity status degree or something like that? And does it make you, does it put you in those shoes a little bit or no? Did you think of someone like what would happen if let's say Luke does something amazing and becomes something like that? Did it make you feel, how would you feel in that situation?
I mean, I think I would feel a little bit of everything, how they felt, which is great at first, right? It's the happiest people for him. But I would feel a little bit sad just for the fact that, like, I know I would probably never get to see the guy anymore, you know?
Okay.
But it wouldn't be...
I mean, you're also not seeking improv status.
Sure.
Celebrity.
But I guess for me, coming with that, but it would suck because I know I would never probably see the guy anymore. Like, we talk probably 5 times a year at best, you know.
Yeah.
You know, every friend's birthday or whatever, for someone saying something, his birthday, my birthday, and like maybe holidays. So that's like best status ever, at best, you know. So.
Right, right. Would it be like Entourage?
What do you mean?
Just want to go with him and just enjoy it together.
If she's got money like that, yeah, sure.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying fuck you money, but I'm saying like the ultimate version of whatever he's at. Right, everyone has that ultimate version of a dream, right?
Sure.
Like the one you want to be. I'm not saying it has to be celebrity or acting or even, I don't know, it could be a famous scientist. It could be a writer, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your time is going to be taken up completely.
You would think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Now you have all the time in the world.
Anything else on Don't Think Twice? We recommend it, though, right? I do,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I recommend
it. It's very different, though. It's not for everyone, I would say. And it's it does bring the awkward. It brings the feels. It brings the laughter. Definitely more the feels and the awkward than the laughter sometimes, but otherwise it's very good. Not a very not forgettable movie, very memorable. So,
yeah, it definitely brings in a lot of things that most people don't like to think about, I guess, or don't.
This is why these kind of movies are not, unfortunately, very popular, because it makes people feel things they don't want to feel. That's why a lot of people don't go to the movies for this reason.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate. But
and then
it's
they
the
complain,
truth.
Oh, we have a new reboot.
Yeah. Like, these movies suck. I'm like, go watch good movies. There are perfectly good new movies out there all the time.
That theater's too far.
Okay. I hate when that's an excuse.
That's an excuse all the time.
Yeah, for me, I'm like, if I'm not that excited for a movie, like, I can wait till the rental. But I'll know what it is.
Exactly.
But,
same
like,
here.
or, you know, unless we're doing it for the show.
I mean, I'll complain that a theater's far, but I'm still watching the movie.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, so I think that's it on Don't Think Twice. We enjoyed it, so watch that, and it'll be available to rent eventually if it's not in your local cinema, but we recommend it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back from this clip here, we'll review our last film of the evening, which is Midnight Special. So stay with us.
Dad?
Yeah.
Are you scared?
Yes.
You don't have to worry about me.
I like worrying about you.
You don't have to anymore.
I'll always worry about you, Alan. That's the deal.
A father and son go on the run. That's funny. Pursued by the government and a cult drawn to the child's special power.
Ooh.
Midnight Special, a movie that came out earlier this year. I believe we said March.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Michael Shannon. Sorry, I say that because of the director, Jeff Nichols. Starring Michael Shannon, Joel Edgerton, Kristen Dunst, which I was like, whoa, Kristen Dunst is the movie.
Kristen.
Oh, Kristen, yeah.
Is it Kristen or Kirsten?
Oh, Kirsten. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's Kirsten. Sorry. Really,
yeah.
My dyslexia kicked in. And Driver. No, it was just being on purpose. And the kid, obviously. Jaden Leiberher.
What? Sure. Yeah, I don't know his name.
Sure.
Yeah. This is, I mean, how many movies does Michael Shannon do a year? Like 10? Easy? He's in every other movie, I swear to God. But this is one of the 10.
It feels that way, anyway.
From this year. Yeah, he makes a lot of movies. That guy's always working. And he's never the worst part. I mean, he could be in really bad movies, like Superman. But
this year, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 movies he's in.
I was right, 10 movies? Jesus.
Double digits, I think the man hits every year now.
Oh, my God.
Or close to it.
Yeah, yeah.
The man did a lot of movies.
He's good. I don't know how he remembers all the scripts. I fucking wouldn't.
I think he pre-records everything and just...
He's like a robot. He just downloads the fucking dialogue. He's a fucking android.
That being said, Michael Shannon and Jeff Nichols, you know, doing the movies again together.
Well, he's been in all his movies.
Yeah, that's what
Shotgun saying. Stories. Have you seen that one?
No.
Yeah, pretty good family drama like...
like all of his movies?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. He's definitely like very American... He's an American filmmaker. He's into, I mean, as in, he does American tales. Almost always out of whole cloth. Like, he makes shit up. He doesn't make, you know, take from books or anything. He, all his stuff is mostly original. He does American tales and always has to do with some sort of family drama thing. Almost always. That's just thick. That's what he likes doing.
That's good.
Same thing with Mahmud. Same thing with Take Shelter. Take Shelter is probably the biggest one. Take Shelter is a movie that made Jeff Nichols a big, like, indie name for a lot of people. Like, you know, he's very famous among cinephiles,
right?
And people looking to be cinephiles. And you've seen that one, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So yeah, this is latest. I've been waiting for this movie for 2 years. It was supposed to come out in 2015.
Right. This is the movie that Luke and I were willing to go to New York to watch. Remember? But you couldn't go.
Or wouldn't go. Like, that's ridiculous. I think I would go to New York for a movie.
That was only like 12-hour drive.
And it's not happening.
14 hours.
It's not going to happen.
That being said,
yeah,
we didn't watch it. I missed it when it was in theaters because I think it was very limited. Like, 2 theaters had it here.
I don't remember, but yeah.
I think it was like Evanston only had it and maybe Music Box.
Maybe.
For a little bit. And I don't know. Just something happened. I was like, I'll go watch it. And I was like, nope, not there anymore. So...
That happens a lot.
Yeah, it's fine. So now we have, obviously, it's on VOD and stuff, so we can watch it.
Yeah.
That being said, Midnight Special, I thought it had to do something about ordering food at a diner. Nothing about that.
No.
I don't know how I feel about this movie.
That's a lot of people's reactions.
I just recently watched it, and I haven't had time to digest the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I really liked it, and I had to watch it in 2 parts, unfortunately,
So, like, I had to take a pause in between it. Yeah, so I don't know what to think, so I don't even know where to go with this movie.
Maybe. Well, I've had months to think about it, so maybe I'll start off
with it. Sure, that'd be a lot helpful.
So, I also had a similar effect when I saw it the first time, is that I didn't know what to make of this movie. I knew that I liked certain parts. I know that I was iffy on certain other parts, and I knew that I loved other parts. So this movie is definitely all over the place as far as my feelings for its capacity to be a good movie or not, or a great movie. I know it's somewhere between there. It's a good to a great, maybe. So it's a positive overall review for me. Midnight Special is, it's like a mash of genres almost. It begins with like a mystery thriller, maybe mystery crime thriller because of the whole run and gun type deal, and while it's being peppered in with, you know, with foreshadowing stuff and a lot of like talk about this kid and what he can do, and you see some of the stuff that he can do, but you're not to the fullest extent yet. This little kid with goggles on, and by the end of it, it's just full blown sci-fi, almost fantasy film, and still with a little crime and a little action, but not a lot. And this movie is definitely like I think this movie is trying to evoke a sense of wonder that, if that's its main thing, I think it fails because it didn't evoke that for me personally, and it didn't seem to evoke that for a lot of people. I'm sure that it did for some. And the whole idea, if it's trying to do that, I think it failed. And that's the only reason I can think of why the movie is shown in such a way where like it flip flops from the cult activity that basically worships him, and everything that he comes out of this kid's mouth, they take for scripture, and they actually recite in mass, and they have like a kind of gun thugs with them and shit. They're, you know, I explained why, you know, while they show that, they show the FBI and the CIA, like, and like, you know, their satellites are coming down, and their analyst guy, played by Adam Driver, Kylo Ren himself, you know, showing him like doing what exactly? I don't know what. He's like,
I don't know what either.
Yeah, it's a
very bizarre.
I still don't really know what that he's doing there.
Everything with to do with the cops, I'm like, baffles me.
Yeah, no, the cop stuff itself is fine. Like, they just want to capture, like
them in
it's
general.
Almost like it's almost like government doesn't know what to do. They just know they gotta find this kid. Like, right. It's like,
it feels like typical government thing.
It's like, without, I mean, I'm glad they didn't have to say it either, but if what they're doing is the equivalent of like, this kid's dangerous, we just gotta just detain him. Just like, that's their national instinctive reaction to just detain or destroy. They didn't say it, I'm glad they didn't, but like, it feels like that's the only reason I can think of that they're there. But I mean, it does provide some cool scenes and imagery for sure, but I don't know what 100% they're doing except to add more conflict for the main characters, who at first seem to be running from the cult only. Because that makes the most sense. The cult thing, I understand. This Michael Shannon's character, who went to his cult eventually at some point in his life, him and Kirsten Dunst had this kid, and this kid has these powers that are unexplained, and they are supernatural to the nth degree. They, you know, this kid belongs in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's that powerful, and or that magical. He's magical. The kid's not a kid. The kid's magical, and beyond the glowing blue eyes, he can predict things, he can bring down satellites, he can make meteor strikes, he can fucking kid, I don't know, but he can't live in the daytime, and it's so strange, he's kind of a vampire that way.
It's weird, man.
What is all this stuff thrown at us for? That's my question. Even today, I'm not 100%, like, why put all these abilities and rules on this kid and how he can live and function? If it's made up anyway, why go through all that trouble of showing us this intricately magical being?
I'm not sure why.
Well, the only reason I can think of, this is my many months of thinking about it, is that it's a setup for something else. It's a setup for a sequel.
Maybe.
It's the only real reason I can think about it, because it has a spectacularly crazy ending. Yeah. Where... basically, it unveils itself to the world.
Sure.
Right? And I guess, well, I mean, we talk about the ending separately, but the only reason I can think of that is for the ending, because the ending is, it seems like you catch a glimpse of something that we won't get any information on until unless there's another movie.
Right.
Because otherwise, why does it exist? And if there's no real concrete answer to that question, does this movie fail in some way because it's not good on its own? But there are other elements that make this movie good on its own. Like, the acting is really great. The relationships between these characters are believable and kind of mysterious at first, especially with that ex-cop who's driving a lot. I like Joel Edgerton's character. Him and Michael Shannon's relationship is strange because they clearly knew each other from when they were younger, and he just, like, helped them out.
Yeah, the whole movie's weird, and I would call it more of an adventure, I guess, because that's what they're kind of going through.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to categorize something, it is sort of an adventure that they're going through. It's just really, I like how it begins, and I don't mind where you're just
driving at night with the lights off. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, with night vision. Yeah,
night vision. Yeah,
yeah. And I like how the movie's just kind of, you're just thrown in the movie. You're not getting set up. They don't spend 30 minutes to set up anything for you. You see nothing beforehand. You see nothing of the cult thing until, like, you know, you see the cult, but you don't see them, like, living with the cult or anything like that.
Right.
None of that. And you're just thrown in it. All you know is that this guy stole somebody because you watch it on the TV. There was an Amber Alert. They took the kid.
Right.
There's never a picture of the kid. Like, they never show the kid's face. Or the picture.
Yeah, they show Michael Shannon's face.
For sure.
Yeah.
But they never show the kid, which is kind of weird because they almost never show the picture of the guy. They always show the picture of the kid. So people can see the kid.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about. I forgot about that part. That they didn't show the kid and what that means.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
And yeah, it's just kind of. I get the whole thing. They're running away. You don't know for what. They're trying to get somewhere. And I mean, the main story here, I guess from what I see it, is there's a father protecting his son,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's just trying to get his son to safety or whatever this needs to happen for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
His son tells him, I need to go here. Like, this is where everything's going to be fine. If you take me there, everything's going to be great, right? Okay, cool. Like, let's just get you there. And, you know, obviously blindly follow him, just like everybody else in this cult did, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is his father. So that's the big picture I get. That's the big story element I get from it, is his father's willing to do anything for his son and believes him throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, but he also knows that instinctively that he is taking his son to some sort of salvation. But that salvation is, he doesn't know what form it is. He doesn't know exactly what it is.
Exactly.
But he knows that it'll mean that he has to separate from his son.
Yeah.
He knows that throughout the movie. And that's some of the inner struggle that we watch throughout the movie, especially at the end, of course. But Ken, is that something that's relatable? Because that's a very specific, complicated thing for a father figure to go through, and therefore something kind of complicated for the audience to relate to. And I'm curious if that really worked for you personally. Not just because you're a father, just saying in general, did that work for you? That the fact that he is saving his son, but that means that he'll not be with him.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, it works for me.
Okay.
I mean, that's... Yeah, you're willing to do anything for him, even if it means you just can't be with him. Like, it's fine. Like, it sucks. I mean, he gets tormented the whole way, probably. But at the same time, it's rather that than being, you know, stuck somewhere forever or whatever the case is. I don't know what the case is with that.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it overall worked for me, but it's... It was like a gnaw in my mind for it, though, for a while watching it the first time. And the other thing is that I think the movie does really, really well as far as its genre stuff is the mystery of it all. Like, when you're watching it in the beginning, especially the first half, like, you're just constantly asking questions, but in a good way, where, like, you're wondering, like, why do they feel like they have to kill this cop from this car accident that they're in the middle of the road that one time in the beginning? Why do they feel like they have to kill this cop? Like, what's so important and dire as you're watching it? And why is it so important for this? Why isn't it so important for that? Like, why is this father going through such lengths? Why, like, as you, and maybe not all those questions are really answered because you don't know where they're going, like, where are they going? Where is, you know, like, where could they possibly go that's so important? And yeah, you'll get that answer. But, like, I just like how the mystery builds on itself, yeah, even as you're getting some of
the mystery hits a really great peak when you see the kid's ability, when he kind of makes the earthquake house shake shit going on, yeah, and like he breaks the house, basically. And that's just, you're just, I mean, I asked myself, what the fuck, immediately. Because I was like, okay, I guess that's what it is.
Kind of remind me of the kid from Looper a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And I was like, I guess that's what it means. They're running away because this kid has powers or abilities or something like that. And that makes sense why you would kill a cop for that.
And you do get the answer to the question of why the government is following them, because this kid found, like, had all these codes, and basically his preachings, his whatever, came, they were like secure codes that he's not supposed to know, that he got from government computers and satellites.
Right, exactly.
That, you know, coordinates to their nuclear missiles and stuff. I don't remember what it was.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I think it was like access to like the mainframe.
Yeah, but somehow they got pinged to the government and the CIA or whatever, and they're like, well, what the fuck? This kid knows everything.
Right.
And that's why they're after him. And that does get answered, and it does make overall sense, but
it's very loose. It's very loose,
and also, like, it's funny because the government that portrayed in this movie, because you could portray it really two ways: the Steven Spielberg way, where they're like, government's cool, and they'll be really friendly. Yeah, like
the ET version of them?
Yeah, the impossible version, and then there's the dick ass version where they come in their guns, shoot first, ask question later.
I guess the ET moment is when they let him be by himself with the NSA guy.
Was that letting him?
I guess. Like,
yeah, I guess so.
Right, it's just interesting. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know where to go with that, because a lot of the movie feels just like, what is going on, and that's what you feel a lot of the movie. That's what I felt a lot of the movie. And like, I also felt really weird that we had to see, like we're finding these the cult guys that followed them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I didn't get, like, a lot of the times I knew they were cult guys, but a lot of the times I just didn't feel like why. Why is there such a need for this? Like, is it just because, like, they really needed, like, they really just followed everything he said? Was it that? Like, I don't know. I didn't get that.
There have been some diehard cults, like, that are based on less than this kid.
Right, exactly.
This kid's actually the real deal, kind of.
Yeah.
In more ways than
one. No, I get that. But it's just really weird. And they don't explain. He has a mother, right?
Yeah, Kirsten does.
Exactly. Yeah. And he has a father. They just don't explain.
No, yeah, they don't explain a lot of that.
None of it.
Kind of have to infer.
Like, you just, yeah.
Like,
and then the ending is just, not the very end, because the very end we'll get to also. Right. I have a question about that. But the ending is just fucking bizarre on its own. Where you do get this thing, I guess, the cliffhanger, or like...
That's what I'm saying. A lot of these questions that leave us hanging with that I'm not 100% on. Yeah. It's just like, they seem to be...
Or do we get the answer to that of like how us as humanity would handle it? Because us as humanity, just like, shit just kept rolling. We're going to ignore the fuck out of this.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know where, like, what, besides the main adventure story of Michael Shannon taking his son to liberty, I guess, right?
Yeah, and actually, he doesn't actually take the last straw.
No,
because his mother does. Right.
Yeah, it's, like, I don't know. I don't know what... I don't know what exactly was I expecting from this movie besides a late order at a diner. The Midnight Special.
Yeah, the Midnight Special. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And that's what makes me a little bit frustrated about the film. And this is why I can't ultimately love it. You know, when we did in the old podcast, we did our top five movies of the year so far. And I know you and Luke were like saying, oh, Midnight Special is number one or whatever, because it's... this badass looking movie with Jeff Nichols, you know, directing.
Sure.
And it wasn't even my top five at all, because I had all these questions that were just so, not just so unanswered in a cool, ambiguous way, but they were unanswered in a hole, like it's a hole in the film.
There's a lot of blind faith going on in this movie also.
Oh, it's a lot of blind faith that I mean, I don't entirely, either it's not portrayed well or I just didn't feel.
Yeah.
And it just didn't, and like, I didn't get it.
Like, I don't know if Jeff Nichols is trying to... That's his name, right? Jeff Nichols?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's trying to get at, like, our blind faith to God in general.
Mm-hmm.
Or not ours, but anybody who does believe in God.
Yeah.
Is it, like, how we're willing to follow, like, or some, you know, some to everything, you know? To Hell's End? Is it the struggle of this man taking his son and just doing anything to protect him, even if it means letting go of him, right? His father and wife and, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And mother? Is it, like, is it us, what's it called, trying to deal with the fact that, you know, we don't look at a big picture and we just decide to. Like, there's a lot of things in this movie that happens. And
maybe maybe we're just putting a lot of. It's the thing is that at one point, let's say several weeks after I first saw it, I had all these questions still.
Sure.
And people kept asking me, oh, how was Midnight Special? I'm like, I don't know. Or I would say, like, I liked it. I just don't know why. You know, because I still like the movie.
Yeah.
I still don't know 100% why. I know some of the elements for sure. But after a while, I just kept thinking, like, okay, maybe I just overhyped this director, and it was just like a, it's just maybe a misfire compared to his last three much more cohesively, narratedly, perfectly nice little movies.
Yeah.
This is just maybe more of a scattershot that I just, maybe he was trying something different. I mean, I think he said in interviews before, like, he's just always going to try something different or do something a little different from last time. And I get that, and maybe this is just a misfire, or maybe just so different. It's like Woody Allen doing a musical or something. I don't know what, like, something different he never does. Maybe it's just so strange out of his past work that I'm just trying to read too much into it, and it's just nothing more than what we're seeing. And maybe it is like a question of him trying to make an actual sequel out of this movie and trying to start his own thing, and we'll find out later, or we won't find out, and that's it. And we just, if you didn't get it, you didn't get it. Or maybe there's nothing to get, or maybe there's some extended version out there and it was cut to ribbons, and you'll never know.
Right.
It's Paco's style, I don't know.
Right. I do like your thing where the sense of wonder that you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel that either, where you're going with it.
Yeah.
I did find it cool that there's, like, this whole civilization.
Yeah, let's talk about that, man.
Right.
That was cool.
This whole civilization.
A lot of people hated that, though.
I found it cool that there's, like, this whole hidden civilization. The question is it hidden, like, is it non-existent unless if it's existent? Like, do they let us just see it and it's there? Or is it just, like, we're never even going to feel it being there. We're never going to ever encounter it because it, like, was brought down to us.
I like how it was jutting out of the buildings of ours.
Right.
It's so strange. It's like they worked around us.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, it's almost like they do exist in our time, in our dimension, if you want to call it
but
that.
But at the same time, not.
It's interesting questions to think about. It's very fringe-like also.
Because, I mean, you'd think like a helicopter would have hit it or something. A piece of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like something, you know.
Yeah, but even though we do see it in the whole the eastern coast, right?
Yeah, I mean, it takes up all of Florida. It.
Yeah, some of the states, so all the way up and down
Louisiana, Alabama.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Even though we do see that people are seeing it for the first time and it's really insane, we don't see any actual interaction with them, so.
Right.
And I think the only time we see people or the beings from that world, let's just say people, because the kid, it looks like a human being also. We only see them when they're approaching the kid. So no one actually sees how they look like, right?
Right. But it does feel like, I guess, the sense of wonderment that came to me, or the only thing that I really, like, asked myself. I did, like I said, I found it cool, like, how everything was built around.
Yeah.
But what I did was more like, it looked like they had bodies, like a silhouette of a body or, like, a kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it could have, the only thing that came to my mind right away was, are these evolved forms of us?
It felt like Spirited Away, honestly. It felt like
that's pretty cool.
A bunch of spirits made this world.
Sure.
And this kid is like a bridge between them. He was born either as an anomaly or as a representative of such thing, or maybe an experiment, whatever. And this kid found the actual way in. And this is just like a combination.
Right. Well, the way I saw it was like, I guess it's more like, Are this is the evolved form of what we will be eventually?
Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah, someone mentioned to me once. I'm like, yeah, it could be like a time thing.
It's not. It's
kind of cool. Like we're so advanced that we just live on a different plane where maybe we don't need to eat.
Yeah, and worry it's, like about it's like the fourth dimension. We're there.
And they're like, yeah, they'll live back in when the Earth was the most blue. And this is 2012 or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah. That's a cool thing about it. That's the wonder part.
Yeah.
I don't know enough, obviously, and I did overall enjoy the ending, even though. As Luke would probably say, like, not enough closure. Questions answered, no closure. And he'd be right, because there's a lot of stuff that isn't very closed in to thematically to anything. So, but I did enjoy it. I just don't know why.
I have one question. It's the very end,
mm-hmm.
where not the very, very end. It's
You see, what was the state trooper's name? His friend that helped him out? Jeff, I think his name was, or something.
You just keep saying Jeff.
Sure. But I think it was Jeff. Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
Lucas, yeah.
Mine's with
Joel.
Jeff.
Joel.
You're right.
Lucas, yeah, that's right, Jeff. Thanks for noticing that.
You're welcome.
He's in jail because he killed a cop, I guess. That's the main reason he's there.
Do they know that for sure?
I guess. I don't know. I thought that was the main reason. That and they're asking him questions about, like, tell us again what you saw or whatever. He's like, you guys saw the same thing, right? And they're like, whatever, right?
Oh, you're talking about the post-mortem thing. The very ending, I guess, we were talking about, right?
Right. And then
Then
the NSA guy comes in, you know, what's it called? Star Wars guy. And he makes it feel like he never saw him. Like, at first I was like, is he protecting? He's obviously protecting his job. Like, I never met this guy in my life before, right?
Right.
Like, I never dropped
this I didn't help these people out.
Right, exactly. Right. And it feels like that. But it also feels like just like, bro, you just imagined the whole thing. And you were just like on a batshit crazy spree or something.
Do you think that's what it was?
That's another thing that got me. Like, looked at him like, why are you looking at me with a sense of wonderment of who I am? I'm just like, I've never met you before.
I say that I don't know enough about this character to know that whether he be A, good at lying, B, would lie. Or that if it was like a power thing where he just forgot part of the power the kid gave him or whatever, the magic stopped working, so he forgot everything about the kid. I don't know. I don't know. But my question, I guess, would be to you is that at the very end there with his eyes, what do you think is going on there?
With whose eyes?
His father's eyes. Michael Shannon's eyes.
I don't know.
You didn't see it?
No, I don't know what's going on.
I mean, his eyes were, they were glowing blue.
Or white, isn't it white?
White? I think it was white. They had that little flicker.
Yeah, it was blue. It was blue flicker, but yeah. It's like white altogether.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. It's weird. Maybe he was chosen. I don't know. I don't know. That's why I was just like, oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying.
He's got the all spark.
It just seems like a sequel thing. Like
it could be, yeah.
It just feels like it. Everything in the movie is really put it together, it's just that it's just it came from original material. It doesn't come from a series of books, so we know that we don't know if there's a sequel.
Right.
So like it's so out there and original and its own kind.
Yeah, in a book it leave me a lot of sense of wonderment.
Right.
Because you're reading it and you're getting every single detail.
That
right?
We just don't know. My favorite theory, the best theory I can think of from that is that he whatever power is inherent in some of these people is clearly it came from his sides. That's why when he made his kid. Like he's a gene that gave him that.
That's interesting.
That power, or that his recent stint with all this power, being close to it, he can now see that world as if it was here.
Hmm.
He's seeing that world
like
right
his
now.
Son made him let him.
Like
see
he
it.
Like he can see the spirit, or whatever it is.
Spirit world.
So now I'm
You're
calling it spirit world.
Calling it spirit world.
I'm clearly calling it the spirit world. He's seeing the spirit world at all times as he's seeing real life now too.
That's interesting.
Hmm. Could be something like that, but who knows.
Right.
I definitely want answers. But
right. Like I said, I think in a book, I would totally get a sense of wonderment just because of the details that you'll always get.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see that on a page.
And I probably would definitely look towards another book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in this, I don't know, maybe the execution didn't work out or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A lot of stuff is left unanswered, which in the book would be the same way, but maybe, I don't know.
I'm with you, man. I don't know either.
I can't tell you I love the movie. I can't even tell you I like it yet. Like, I just don't know where I fall with it.
I know I definitely liked it. I just don't know if I love it. And even if I did, I don't know if I can recommend it.
Definitely a hard movie to tell somebody to watch.
Yeah. Might be strange. Maybe I'll make more people watch it just so I can talk about it more and see if something lodges into place.
That works.
Anyway, so that's Midnight Special. Hopefully, I mean, we gave you no answers either. So if you have seen it and wondering about some possible alternative answers or theories, we gave you a little bit, but we know nothing, Jon Snow. So that's it. That's it for our show. Don't forget, you can send feedback to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Tell us how much we suck at reviewing this movie or any other movie. So tell us how great we are. No, don't tell us. Tell us whatever you want. Check out the website, of course, otherpodcast.com for all the shows that are coming out. Remember, we come out every 2 weeks. We are a bi-weekly show. We come out every Friday. So our next show will coming out October 7th. So that's it for that. Let's see what else. You can check me out on Twitter for movie chatter and also promotional stuff at Armin Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke is not here. Ralph?
You can follow me at GamerRalph with two R's and an F.
And another note, if you're interested in other podcasts, and especially if you are not entirely tired of my voice, I am a part of another show, a co-host, called SOS-radio.com. You can find that on iTunes and at SOS-radio, where we do supernatural talks. We have supernatural-themed shows. We do hauntings. We do a lot of that stuff. We talk about a lot of theories that go around that stuff, and not just hauntings, but it could be aliens. It could be time travel-y weird stuff, paranormals, phenomena in the world. So, yeah. Anyway, so check that out there. Don't forget to support us. If you can't support us on through donations, please do so on iTunes. Give us a rating. That would be amazing. It'll give more people traffic to our feed. What are we doing next time, Ralph? Do you know?
Probably watching movies.
Probably watching some movies. Next time in 2 weeks, we'll come back with, I'm choosing the films this time, we'll review Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Okay. I really want to see that. It's from Tim Burton, and I know that he has not had a good track record lately. But maybe like Clint Eastwood, he'll come back with a good one.
I mean, you make so much, you're bound to something. Something's good, right?
I guess at that point.
Something's going to stick.
Yeah, I guess at that point. I hope it's good. It looks good.
He's been in years of rut, though.
Yeah, I know. He has been in years. We'll also review the remakes we make of Magnificent Seven. That's going to be interesting because it's a Western action movie for sure, starring Denzel Washington and Chris Pratt and all that. But, like, it's coming off the back of two amazing movies. Seven Samurai and the original Magnificent Seven are really great movies. I'm wondering how this one will fare.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to talk about that. I can't wait to hear what you guys think about that. And we'll end our show with a film review of a quirky comedy. I think it's a comedy. I know nothing about this movie. It's called Hunt for the Wilder People. And this is made by the guy who did last year's grand hit movie, where We Are from the Shadows or something. What's it called? The vampire movie? We Come from the Shadows?
Something from the Shadows. I can't remember it.
I can't believe I forgot. I saw a movie like three times last year.
Yeah, I really liked it last year, too. It was like one of my top movies.
Yeah, it was amazing. Anyway, it's made by that guy, I think, Taika Waititi's latest film. I think that's the guy's name. And I hear that this movie also not disappoints
What We
at
Do
all.
In the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows. There you go. So we'll be watching that film as well. And that's available to buy, I think. Not to rent yet, but it might be available to rent by then. So until then, my whole cinephiles, I am Oscar.
And Raphael.
And see you later.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie, oh my.
You didn't hear it from me.
Oh, dying. But dude, Uncharted 4, it looks so beautiful.
So I've heard.
Oh my god, it's so good. I'm playing a movie.
I was going to borrow it.
By the way, do they have like knuckles of steel? How can they climb all that shit? Wouldn't be able to do half of that. I'll die. Yeah. I will die instantly.
Well, they're not. Yeah, I guess.
No, it's impossible. Even the ones that are like, oh, I can see a human doing that. Like, I can see a human doing that and then stopping after that because their knuckles will be raw and bloody and horrible. You can't do that. They must have mech hands. It's the only thing I can think of. Anyway, but it's beautiful. You're going to love the game. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2. Anyway, once I finish all that stuff and French... And Buffy and Angel.
Okay, no. You need to not watch Buffy and Angel again.
And Parenthood.
That's like six times now.
And Parenthood.
Still watching that show?
I stopped for a long time. I'm on season 5.
A long time, meaning like a week?
A month. No, less. Anyway. Yeah. Once I finish some of those one of those shows, I can fit in the 30 for 30.
Right.
Gotta finish one of them. Anyway. All right, you want to get started?